It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Here we go. 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number, got to dial 775 in the north. Griffin is here. Willie Ramirez and Griffin are the company. We're going to talk some WNBA because the Aces made, I think, a big trade. Trade with some upside, too. If you didn't see it, Mitch Marner is going to be with Vegas Golden Knights. Going to sign a brand new big deal. We'll get into that a little more this hour, as the Knights are certainly not shy about adding megastars, and the lore is, one, they're a good organization, two, no stadium tax, so that helps. Don't change that rule, Bettman! You saw Bettman get all frosty when, Paul Bissonnette was asking him about Florida and these states like Texas and income tax, and also what the Canadians have to go through, because when you play for one of the Canadian teams, you get absolutely crushed on the taxes.
I'm so tired of that narrative. I really am, Steve, because here's the deal. No matter which corner you turn in any sport, when somebody finds, and I don't want to use the word loophole, when someone finds an angle to take advantage of certain situations to win, they're going to do it. And in the NHL, it's the LTIR. It's not Kelly McCrimmon and the Golden Knights' fault or whoever uses that to their advantage until the NHL fixes it. State taxes have nothing to do with pro sports. It has. I mean, if that's the case, then every single industry in the world should complain about Florida and Texas and Nevada and other states in anything. In our job, it's not just pro athletes. It's in anything. Go talk to your governor or go talk to your state government, not the commissioner. It's not their job to fix it. And, all of a sudden they have an event. Well, then go talk to your state government. Quit putting it on the commissioners and the leagues.
Battle Born Injury Lawyers presents The Big Four at Four. Number four.
Interesting development in the WNBA, close to home with the Las Vegas Aces. So it looks like the Aces are going to pass on breaking up DaWanna Bonner and Alyssa Thomas. Maybe they can meet up in Phoenix. They're engaged. But they will break up Melissa Smith and Dejanay Carrington. Good. That's what you should do. I was livid last week when we started getting to this angle.
Yeah.
About the whole league's going to pass on DaWanna Bonner because, well, maybe she wants to be with Alyssa Thomas, her fiance. Don't care. Need to win basketball games. Grab her. By the way, do we have an update on the waiver situation? Whatever happened with that? It was a two-day waiver period.
She cleared the waiver. The main thing everyone was saying, the reason why GMs and front offices were saying pass is because she had preferential destinations, not just Phoenix, number one. Number two, if they claimed her off waivers, it was a $200,000 grab. Nah. If they waited, which they knew that she would clear, it's an $80,000 grab because they can start negotiating for the minimum veteran salary is like in the high 70s.
Who would you rather have, DaWanna Bonner now or Nelissa Smith?
Ooh, I would probably, I would take Smith because of her youth.
Yes.
But
actually, you know what? I would take both.
No, you just said who, one or
well,
the other.
Well, no, now that I thought about it, yeah. I would try to take both.
Oh, 100%.
It's not like, you know, 100%. Adding Smith helps a lot, but two of them would help. Oh, 100%, even more.
100%. But the Aces to get Nelissa Smith had to waive one really good veteran and one bright young star who can fit in somewhere in Liz Kittley. You get rid of Tiffany Mitchell, who's a very good veteran. But what Nelissa Smith brings is a 6'4" physical body who is exactly what they need. Yeah. She can score some points. She can help move bodies. She can be physical. She can protect Asia Wilson and take the brunt of the double teaming that's coming in and screen and help Asia in the paint at both ends of the floor. This was, you know, someone who made the all-rookie team when she came in the league in 19. She won a national championship at Baylor. So Nelissa Smith is a very good player. She was drafted by the Dallas Wings. She played with the Indiana Fever. For those unaware, this was Nelissa Smith who was with Caitlin Clark her rookie year and a couple of run-ins with who? Dejanay Carrington, when Dejanay was with Connecticut, coached by Stephanie White.
I try to jab myself in the face with my nails, which are not long.
And now you have fingerprints on your glasses. Yes, so Carrington and Smith reunite the couple down in Dallas. It's one of WNBA's fandom's favorite couples to see on social media. And it did, within an hour, TikTok was blowing up with different videos. They screen record different videos from both of their social media sites, and they're putting it up like, you know, can't believe they're breaking it up, up. So they're a very big couple on social media. But you're right. It is an interesting concept, which we talked about, Steve, last week, is why do these teams need to feel compelled in keeping couples together on the teams? We saw it with Dejanay and Nelissa. We are probably going to see it with Phoenix, Alyssa, and DeWanna Bonner. The big question right now with DeWanna Bonner, why haven't they pulled the trigger yet, is do they want to break up this chemistry, this incredible chemistry that's going on? Because up until yesterday with Vegas's win, Phoenix was arguably the hottest team in the league.
What if Bonner comes in and is malcontent again and wants to quit again?
Because
she's playing less than 10 minutes.
I don't think she will be, because first of all, she's going to be playing with the team that's winning. Remember, Indiana, you can say all you want about Caitlin Clark and Stephanie White, and they're not necessarily. If Vegas isn't a good basketball team right now, Indiana's not a good basketball, because they have the same record.
Well, but it's because of injuries. Caitlin Clark is out.
That's not what.
She's missed six games now.
Right, but they,
seven.
They've won. They didn't lose all those games.
I know they didn't
won
lose
without
all
her. They won without.
They actually did over the weekend.
Okay. So yeah. That's neither here nor there. It's not on her. They've lost some games with her too. The point is, she'll be happy, because if her playing time is still, and first of all, DeWanna Bonner's playing time, regardless, she'll be fine because of Alyssa. If she goes to Atlanta with the other choice that she had, I think she'd be just as fine because of the complexion of that team and the fact that she's played with Brittany Griner.
That's where she should
go. There's familiarity there.
Yeah. So Nelissa Smith, 6'4", listed at 185. I'm guessing a little bit heavier. DeWanna Bonner, I knew she was skinny. I love the weights in WNBA too. 137. 6'4", 137. She's like Manute.
But physical.
But a different type of,
yes, no, you're right. You're right.
Versus, but, you know, someone who's got some ball on him and Smith.
You know what I compare it to is like Caitlin this year, where, you know, the offseason, a lot of those pictures were accentuated in nice little, you know, you throw a filter on there and it defines the tricep when she's pumping her fist or whatever. But Caitlin, in the same regard, you know, or Lexi Hull, they have, you know, skinnier frames, but they're tough. They're strong. It's like a defense, a female soccer player on defense that's got a slender body, but they can body people. They can truck people. DeWanna Bonner has a good core, and I think that her length, in terms of her height and her wingspan, she'll be a good pickup. For whatever reason, I think it goes beyond. I think there was a falling out. There's a disagreement, and that's why she's not with Indiana.
All right, let me get under center. Yeah. Omaha! Yellow Cadillac, hot dog with chili, hot, hot. All right, audible. We got to move through this.
Yeah.
Some of the stories are gone. You don't have to play anything now. 3-2-1. There you go. You said earlier, fight card for USC, one of the best you've ever seen live.
It really was. I mean, remind me the kid's last name, Griffin, on the preliminary. He's one of their young prospects, Jacoby Smith.
Smith, Oklahoma State wrestler. How jacked was he? How aggressive was he? That was awesome.
Ended it quick.
Well, he tried to end it quick.
Yeah.
And then his opponent, Nico Price, stayed alive, but then he ended it quick. Yeah. When he transitioned and got the choke on. But just his attack was awesome. I thought McKinney was great on the early part of the card. I'll tell you the fight I really enjoyed, because I didn't watch the live card live. I caught up with it. But I watched the early part of the card live. I thought the first fight of the night, the freaking heavyweight fight.
Oh.
I love that fight, because the one guy, it kind of looks like you, was just like b- beaten and bloodied, and he was still fighting hard.
Well, that's just it. The first round, I think, is what did him in, right? And his face was bloodied up. But then, and I'm sitting there watching, and I said, if this goes in, if this wasn't a three-round match, the guy that won, and I can't even think of their names, he probably would have won because he was building momentum.
Janata Jazeez, or Duniz, whatever however you say it, Jinnies, against Alvin Hines. Alvin Hines, an American. The guy who won has got to get in better shape. He's got to get a better gas tank. I thought Hines, for his face looking like a freaking hamburger patty, showed a lot of stamina, and he's a legit heavyweight. He's 6'2", and his legs were gigantic. I thought he threw a good overhand right, but that was the first fight. And then Jacoby Smith, the next fight against Nico Price, beats him. Jack Hermanson was down after getting knocked out by Gregor Rodriguez. I don't know how long it felt like in the arena. I was like, this is starting to get real dangerous here.
It was scary.
Yeah.
It was scary.
What a knockout.
The thing that I kept going back to after watching the highlight after highlight, I don't know about you, Griff, but was that I kept saying, he's not moving, but he also got hit in the jaw. At least he didn't get hit flush in the nose or where you think the nose bone goes up into the brain. Like, he just got, it was a flush shot on the jaw. So I was like, he's just knocked.
He got knocked out.
He's KTFO.
Head slammed on the mat. Yeah. And then Rodriguez was able to get in and smash him one more time, like on the bottom part of the chin.
Yeah, everyone was getting Herb on Herb Dean.
Well, he tried.
He did try, right? Yeah. Okay.
They showed the replay, it was split second. Yeah. But the fights.
The main fight, the best fight
Pantoja
was what?
That was a good finish and broke that, whatever it was, 2-40 streak for 35-year-old and up, you know, at that weight class and weight classes in that area where guys just, like, older guys just don't win championship fights. But Topuria, I thought Oliveira was going to be there in the fight, but unfortunately he was there too close and fought in a phone booth. And, man, what a freaking 1-2 knockout. That was tremendous.
But you know what? The fight of the night was Joshua Van and Brandon Royval.
You're right about that.
I mean, 419 combined significant strikes landed were the third most in a UFC fight, the most in a three-round bout and a featherweight clash. Griff, that was easily the fight of the night.
That might have been fight of the year. That fight was insane, especially when you look how that fight got set up. Van having to come in as a late substitution. He's facing the number one guy in Brandon Royval.
And was a favorite.
He was favorite.
He was minus 120.
Joshua Van is the same guy who the UFC has put him. They put him on the UFC Noche card down at the Sphere. He fought at UFC 316 at the beginning of this month. 3 weeks later, he fills in UFC 317, beats the number one guy, and sets up a title shot later in the card, having the face off with the champ himself in the octagon.
Let's see: Smith, Price, Janice, Hines, Van Royval, Cara France, Pantoja, Topuria, Oliveira. No former Soviet Union fighters, huh? And it turned out to be a great card.
Go figure.
Not trying to smear the name of all these guys, because their fights sometimes are action fights, but so many are based in wrestling and grappling that sometimes the fights are grinders. Not on this card.
Yeah, and right after Pantoja's wins, he was joined in the ring by Van, ranked 12th, and they said, let's make it happen. Let's go. So it was a nice setup for what could be a showdown.
We got to go to break here.
Okay.
I'm going to tease ahead. In the middle of the hour, we do have to talk about what I thought. I didn't see it live, but when I saw a standoff between Paddy Pimblett and Topuria in the ring after, I'm like, what is going on? Are they going to set up Paddy Pimblett, who's barely a top 15 fighter? Like, what is Dana White doing? Well, Dana filled in people. We'll tell you what he said. He was not happy about that showdown.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Big day of trades around Las Vegas as Vegas Golden Knights land Mitch Marner, one of the best players available. And the Aces, it's not a blockbuster, but it's a very necessary trade. Right, Willie? To add more depth and at a position where they're very thin at, let's bring in Doug Feinberg, who covers the WNBA for AP. Doug, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing today?
We're good. How would you qualify this deal that the Aces made with Nelissa Smith?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it was a necessary deal. It got them some more depth in the post. Pretty good athletic player will help them. Nothing against Liz Kittley or some of the other players they've had, but I think Melissa will give them a little more of what they need right now to sort of give a little extra oomph to their offense and defense.
So, Doug, we saw what happened when Melissa went to Indiana, and, you know, the sort of just the vibes, just I think with a lot of players and obviously with Christy Sides last year, it just wasn't vibing, if you will, right? And then DeJounay ends up in Dallas, so Melissa goes down to Dallas. Why will this move and work for Smith? Because it seemed like her second tweet today, you know, on the other hand, I get to go play with my goat, obviously referencing Asia Wilson. Why does this work for her and comfortable in leaving Dallas, leaving DeJounay's side? We know some of the players that are together like to play in the same cities, going back to Courtney and Allie, Dewan and Alyssa, which may be headed for a reunion, and Alyssa and Nay.
Well, Willie, I think the big thing is there's a veteran leadership in Vegas that was kind of missing in Dallas and Indiana. Those are two young teams the last couple of years. I think with Asia Wilson and Chelsea Gray and Jewel Lloyd and, of course, Becky Hammon in charge, I think there's stability and veteran leadership that will help Melissa in Vegas to fit in and to reach her full potential. I think it's the big piece that's there. Yes, you sort of break up the coupling of her and DeJounay as far as being in the same city at the same time, but they're strong enough to have their no problems there. And I just think from the business standpoint and the playing standpoint, I think it works out well for Vegas to get her.
Outside of the WNBA media and WNBA fans, I think lost in the shuffle in terms of big headlines because of NHL free agency, NBA free agency, and in town, like as Steve mentioned, the Mitch Marner deal and then Alyssa Smith deal. Pretty big news. Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia set to join the WNBA. I saw a statement from Tennessee governor, I want to say, in terms of he understands that or I believe it was, right, that they understand that the tie-in with NBA cities, but Tennessee's going to continue to try to get a franchise. But pretty big news in terms of three more franchises coming in 2028.
Yeah, actually, Willie, they're coming 28, 29, and 30. They're being okay. Smart about it. They're Cleveland's in 28, Detroit's in 29, and Philly's in 30. So it's not all in 1 year because that would be a disaster as far as expansion drafts go.
Right.
Would create a giant mess. But, yeah, Tennessee gets it. I mean, those are three teams that are coming in that have all NBA ownership groups, which you mentioned, which I think will help. Tennessee's still, I think, on the short list. Commissioner Kathy Youngworth said today that Houston, they were very impressed with their bid and that the ownership group for the Rockets has been very supportive of the W. I'd be shocked if they don't add Houston as a team again in the 2031, 2032 range, which is crazy. We're talking 7 years out right now. But I think that the three teams they're adding in the next 5 years – are going to be really good for the league, and they're great, stable franchises. Will add to rivalries that everyone loves to have. You have the Philly, New York, Washington. If Boston gets a team, sort of the Amtrak corridor, Detroit and Cleveland are NBA rivals, and they have some rivals in the other teams that are already in there on the NBA side. So I think it fits well for everyone adding those three teams by 2030.
What are these owners paying in terms of expansion fees?
$250 million. So it's not cheap to get the W anymore. It used to be, it was $50 million for Golden State a couple years ago. That's five times that amount now with the $250 million entry fee, which I think is a great sign for the league that teams are willing to pay that much to get in. Gives them more capital. Just shows that the teams are valuable in the WNBA now.
I forget who published a report, if it was Forbes or like a Sportico, but someone had published a report about values of franchises. I think the Fever were tab the most valuable, like $400 million. The Aces were at $300 million. $250 million expansion fee. Do you believe that those numbers on the Fever and the Aces?
I do. Sportico and Forbes, I think, both did something, and they're always right on target with that. I think actually Fever was up there. I think Golden State was number one in the Sportico
Golden State's
one,
now $500 million. That just came out. Yeah,
$500 million.
Yeah,
and that's an expansion team worth $500 million. So. If you get a chance to go to those games, I haven't been there yet, but I've heard they're fantastic. They're selling out every game, 18,000 fans for an expansion team that doesn't have Caitlin Clark, and they're fantastic. So they're going to be a destination. They're going to be a major player, I think, next year in free agency because players come in and see it and go, wow, look at this. They have brand-new facilities. They have fans that are passionate. that's the place to be. I think they call it Valhalla, sort of making fun of the Valhalla for the Valkyries in the Norse mythology. But it's just great. Seeing teams worth a lot of money is a great thing for the league.
Doug Feinberg covers WNBA for AP. So then that would also suggest to me that this narrative out there that the league is losing money, it has no value, that all flies in the face of things. What is going on with the league in terms of health, and what is this future TV deal looking like?
Well, I think there's different things here. That you make some good points in the teams losing money and league doing well. Most professional teams, I think, lose money. They make the money owners on valuations, like how much a team is worth. If you buy a team for $200 million and you can sell it for $1 billion a couple years later, that's a pretty good deal, I would think. I mean, I'm not ever in that stratosphere financially, but I got to think that's a good deal.
Sure.
Whereas, like, yes, the league, most teams have lost money over the years, but it's getting better. I mean, the new TV deal, which is in the billions, will help. It will raise salaries when the new CBA comes out in a year. It's going to help everyone having more money thrown into the league through TV, through sponsorships, through other things. Revenue's up as far as, like, attendance goes. The ratings are great on TV, so it makes it more valuable. They're heading in the right direction. It just takes some time. And Caitlin Clark's been the catalyst. I mean, just getting her in the league, all the eyeballs she's brought in, helps everyone. Rising tides lift all ships or all boats, something of that nature. So Caitlin Clark is that tide that I think is lifting everyone in the WNBA.
So that being said, with the increasing valuations, and we're seeing it at such a rapid pace, the players have the leverage in these upcoming negotiations.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's tough to say, hey, we're losing money, we can't pay you anything.
Yeah.
When all the numbers are trending in the right direction. I mean, that doesn't fly anymore. But like, oh, really? So you're having all these teams come in, you get $250 million from each of these new teams down the road, yet you have no money to pay us, and we're the ones that are helping everything? So that's going to be tough to sort of stomach if you're the players, and I think they're not going to stomach it in the CBA negotiations. The question is, how much can they get? There's the NBA still owns 42% of the WNBA, I believe. There's some other investors in the capital raise they did a couple of years ago. But there's money out there, and there's money to be had for the players that they deserve right now. And I wouldn't be shocked if there's at least $1 million player per each team in the new CBA when it comes out.
Wow. Doug Feinberg. AP on Cofield and Company. Let's go back to the Aces making this deal. We've been talking about it a lot lately that the Aces have identified a problem in terms of passion, not being there all the time, and a short bench. But they identified that last year, and it didn't really seem to do a lot until this deal. And I think one of the problems is they don't have a GM. What is the talk around the league that who's the GM? Is Becky Hammon the GM? Is she coaching GM? That, to me, kind of screws up the process in terms of team building every season.
Yeah, it's the league in the past had a lot of GM/coaches, or I guess coach/GM. Yeah. Imagine being next to a player as a coach. Hey, we need you to score 20 a game. We need you to be really good for us.
Right.
And as the GM go, hey, we can't really afford you to score this much. You're not really that valuable to us. We're going to look to try to pay you a lot less money or trade you somewhere. That's just a conflict that way. So they've kind of gone away from that, with the exception of Vegas now. I think maybe one other team might have a GM-coach combo that I think might be none now. I have to think off the top of my head. It's been a long day with expansion news, but I think Becky's probably doing some of it. I think Nikki Fargus is probably doing some of it. But you need to find someone to be the GM. It just makes life easier, and you have somebody in that role who can say, this is the person in charge of trying to make our team better, making the deals, figuring out the salary cap, all the stuff necessary that a GM does. The passion that is there in the past for them, they lost three really good players in this past year. Kelsey Plum was a phenomenal player. Nothing against Jewel Lloyd, but Plum was the passionate player for them. I mean, she was fiery. She is fiery. She's great. You lose her, and then the bench depth, you lose Alicia Clark and Tiffany Hayes, who are two, I think, really good glue players for them coming off the bench. Clark, great defender. Hayes, a pretty good offensive player, sort of spark off the bench. You lose those three, it's tough to replace them, and they've got some okay players off the bench. Dana Evans isn't bad. I know they just got rid of Kitley and Tiffany Mitchell, I think, but they're just missing that, like, extra little piece there. Sydney Colson, another one who's a glue player who didn't play as much, but she was a player that everyone on that team loved.
Yeah.
You get rid of those four, it's tough to sort of get that extra things you need to win games, and that's, I think, they struggle a little bit right now.
Well, you know what? Aaliyah Nye keeps playing the way that she does, and that confidence boost and that energy is going to come because she has been incredible.
Yeah, that's a great point, Willie. I mean, she's a rookie who's done a really nice job for them so far, but it's probably tough for her to like be a vocal person that Sydney was or the defender that Clark was, but she's been definitely a nice spark off the bench for the Aces this year.
We got less than a minute left here, about 30 seconds. Where is DeJuan Bonner going to land?
I mean, money's on Phoenix, and, you know, you never lose in Vegas. The house never loses. So if I was the house, I'd bet on DeJuan Bonner going to Phoenix. So that's my guess.
And I've been talking about Bonner being waived, and I think it's weird that the whole league is going to move out of the way to let her land where she wants to go in Phoenix. Is there talk around the league? Like, no one – I mean, I understand the waiver process was complicated. It just seems weird to me. Like, a lot of people need help, and Bonner's just going to find her way to Phoenix?
I mean, it's one of those things where you say, I'm not going to play for you, so don't sign me.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I think is happening with Bonner. She wants to go to Phoenix, she'll go to Phoenix. She deserves it. She's been in the league for 13 years, 14 years, deserves to go where she wants to play.
All right, Doug, my friend, appreciate you joining us. Doug Feinberg, AP, WNBA.
Thanks, guys.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
NBA tampering, free agent period, is here. Not officially, but all the stuff leaks before the deadline. Bunch of deals coming down. Should have bet the Nuggets. Should have bet the Nuggets for the title. You knew they weren't going to stand pat. Nuggets making moves. Rockets making moves. Memphis signs one of their big players. Kind of a minor note, but I think it's significant that Kevon Looney is actually leaving the Warriors. So, you know, gritty, gutty, big man. He's going to go to the Pelicans. Probably a good move for the Pelicans to bring in some more veterans. They lost C.J. McCollum. Not lost him. They dealt C.J. McCollum. So, I'd be curious to know what Kevon Looney and Jordan Poole's relationship was like, especially since Draymond Green knocked out Jordan Poole at a practice. So interesting move there. That one of the minor notes. I think a big deal, Willie, for the Nuggets was finding a way to lop off some of the salary, especially at positions that had duplicates. And Michael Porter Jr. is making pretty good salary. So he's been dealt to the Nets, and in return they get a good player, a good scorer in Cam Johnson. Bruce Brown, who was a really big backup, pivotal guy for the Nuggets when they won the title, he's coming back. That's a big one. And then the Rockets. We'll get into the Rockets a little more. I think the Rockets are really movers and shakers here. Their GM's doing a really good job. So, interesting start to NBA free agency. And again, like, the names aren't the biggest names out there. I'm looking forward to this week when next week, when Summer League's on the ground. Games start off on Thursday, and then that's when a lot of the, you know, the good conversation about the NBA really gets going with everyone here. And it's a league right now that's in a transition. Do they have a dominant champ in the Thunder? How easily can the Thunder be caught in the West with some creative moves? And what's going to happen in the East? Because it's a mess. Like a wide open. It's a good thing. Wide open.
I don't think that it's unreasonable to think for what – I think the reason that people are pushing back on the Thunder – and saying it's just a one-year, I don't want to call it a one-hit wonder, but sort of a one-year thing, and they're going to have their hands full and wait till the East comes back. For years, this has been a team that it's like, well, they're young, and they're taking their lumps, but when they get good, okay. So for 2-3 years, they've been bounced from the playoffs because they were young. Well, now.
Now they're here.
SGA, yeah, he wins the MVP, and they win the NBA title. So why can't they go on a run? I mean, we've seen other teams with young superstars go on runs and build dynasties or win two in a row, 3 out of 4 years, whatever it may be. There's no reason to think that this team can't do it. So I'm not putting it, you know, and we're seeing all these teams. It's horrible. It's horrible with the increase of these Achilles injuries knocking players out for a year. So And that's not to say that that's the only reason why Oklahoma City can win. I think that it certainly hurt Indiana's chance in Game 7, and they would have had a shot with Halliburton in there. But fact of the matter is, even with every team healthy, no Achilles injuries across the board, Oklahoma City is a bona fide powerhouse, which legitimately should be considered as an NBA Finals caliber team.
Go back to the Thunder. Will the Thunder win multiple titles?
Yes.
Will the Thunder win multiple titles in a row?
I think at some point when this run is done, by this, if they keep this kid for his entire career, they will at some point win two in a row. Will it be next year? I don't know. But they will win multiple, and they'll win two in a row, which means they'll either win next year or that would mean they'd have to win three.
I thought the Nuggets had a chance to win back-to-back titles, multiple titles. They can still win multiple titles. I very much underestimated one. Jamal Murray is very unpredictable, very childish, very immature. So you don't know what you're getting from throughout the season. And two, I didn't know about the Michael Malone ego being completely out of control with the GM and both being blown out. But who knows? Maybe in the end, that's the best thing because they've made a nice return playing move, player move in Bruce Brown and getting rid of Michael Porter Jr.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Monday, Cofield and Company. Willie's here. Griffin, Steve Cofield. Busy week, busy times. NBA free agency opening up. Not officially, but the tampering period, so a bunch of deals being announced. We'll have more of those in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's give away tickets for the NBA Summer League. Caller 7. Four tickets for any day during the NBA Summer League. The league goes down the 10th. To the 20th of July, so starting next Thursday. All 30 teams will be playing at the Thomas & Mack and Cox Pavilion. Caller 7 right now, 364-1100. You can get your tickets at unlvtickets.com. You can also go up to our website, which you should be checking the website all the time because we have generally for a lot of the big events in town, we usually have a VIP package that we offer up there that you can win as well. This is a different giveaway. lvsportsnetwork.com. You can win four reserved VIP tickets. Again, lvsportsnetwork.com. We're going to talk a little college football in about 20 minutes with one of the experts from CBS Sports. I wanted to go back to the expansion in the WNBA. So tell the audience where they're expanding to. How many spots? And it's not all in one year, right?
Yeah, it's starting in 2028, and they will be expanding to Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia. So 28, 29, 30. And don't forget, we still have Portland and Toronto coming on board. So 13 in the league now, 5 coming. There will be 18 teams by 2030 in the WNBA.
Good idea?
It's a good idea. I think right now a lot of the players would like to see rosters expanded for depth and to help with, as we always hear and talk about injuries, minutes being played, because right now your roster's pretty much limited to 12. Some teams will carry 10 or 11. So I think that I think that's something they'll talk about it with the CBA negotiations is getting rosters expanded. But this clearly is going to help because the talent pool that we're seeing, Steve, starting with last year with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and that class. But you know what? This year's rookie class, and our local reporter for the paper of record, Callie, she did a story and interview in Becky Hammond in that this year's rookie class is so much better than last year's as a whole. You know, you had Angel and Caitlin headlining last year's rookie class, but this year you've got Paige Beckers, you've got Kiki Iriafin and Sonia Citron from Washington. You got Ali and I here in Vegas. You got, I mean, around the league, I have to go off the top of my head and think about each team, but there are rookies that are standing out. And this class is incredible. Let's not forget what we have coming up, right? And led by the next wave of talent coming out of college in the next couple of years, led by Juju Watkins at USC. So there's a lot of good basketball, and there's a lot of players that should be on rosters right now. We're seeing hardship contracts signed and then good players being cut. I mean, Haley Jones is a former national champion with Stanford that's been waived a couple of times this season. So, Ari McDonald, if Dawana Bonner doesn't ask to be released, she's probably still looking for a place to play. So, a lot of good talent, and they'll fill out those rosters. By that time in 2030, you're going to, as our Doug Feinberg mentioned earlier in the show, expansion drafts, you know, teams are going to get pilfered here and there. And, you know, I want to make mention of something real quick. Golden State, keep this in the back of your head. Just for nickname purposes, 2017-18, the greatest expansion team in pro sports history, the Golden Knights, were called the Golden Misfits. If the Valkyries go on a run, this may be the new Golden Misfits.
Possibly. Certainly a surprise. Let's get into some Mountain West Conference football. We talked Boise State last week. I'm not going to say we're going to the bottom of the standings because I don't think that's going to be the case, but Sean Reeder covers New Mexico football, Albuquerque Journal, and he's up with Willie and Cofield. How are you, sir?
Doing good today, guys. How about you?
We're good. We're good. Let's start this story out by just talking about where New Mexico is with a new coach by going back to the beginning of this. Were you surprised that Bronco Mendenhall bolted?
I think in the early bit of the process, yes. Just given the tone of how he had talked about the job and working at New Mexico and the team that he kind of had last year. I mean, at certain points, talked about them in just completely glowing terms, right? You know, he loved their resiliency. He loved their toughness. And then, you know, kind of towards the end of the year, when you started hearing some things, but you weren't quite sure, it kind of made a little bit more sense, right? In the sense that, you know, the conference is obviously changing. And, probably wasn't feeling amazing about how the conference was changing in that kind of way. But yeah, you know, it definitely had, just to kind of sum it up, I mean, you know, surprising at first, but I guess the more you kind of dove into it, maybe not all too surprising, but certainly, a gut punch for New Mexico fans.
Who is the new coach? Where'd he come from?
Jason Eck. He was the longtime, FCS coach, did a lot of really good work at South Dakota State as the O-line coach there and then offensive coordinator. And then he was the head coach at Idaho for the last 3 years. Really kind of resurrected a completely moribund Idaho program ever since they dropped down to FCS in, I think, 2014. He said really struggled to get anything meaningful going, and he took them to the FCS playoffs all 3 years. His kind of reputation is that he's a builder, likes to build, through the prep ranks, recruiting high school guys, likes to build, through the offensive line as well, too. So, you know, offensive guy, he's a guy that, kind of prides himself on his ability to connect and recruit.
You like him? You like his messaging so far?
I'll say this. I don't know how much, you guys have seen of him or of Bronco. It is kind of a night and day shift in terms of how both coaches communicate. Bronco is a little more, guarded and maybe not closed off, but, wouldn't give up a whole lot of things. And Jason's far more of an open book.
You know, it's interesting because in Vegas, we have two new coaches and they're media darlings. And we're talking about football and men's basketball. Passner with basketball and Dan Mullen with football. And a big thing here in town is to get people enthused for one, football to go to the next level attendance wise, and for people to get re-energized and start showing up for basketball. So I find it interesting that in the case of Eck, I assume football attendance, because basketball does fine, football attendance does need a boost. It does need someone to come into the market and be like, hey, come on out, be energetic. Is that the case?
Yeah, no, it's 100% the case. It desperately needs a boost, and I think, the kind of latest wave of realignment with the Mountain West has kind of hammered that home for some fans in particular. But yeah, and he's a guy that, just as much as the job will be, kind of putting the roster together and, making sure guys are ready to go on Saturdays and all that, very much going to be getting out in the community and getting fans back into it. And I think he's done a pretty all right job of that so far, right? I mean, it doesn't mean much in the end if, you don't put a good product in the field, and he's said that before. But I think in the early goings, he's done a pretty solid job of that.
Speaking with Sean Reeder, Albuquerque Journal, talking New Mexico football. So you mentioned the word build earlier. He built through the portal. What kind of players did he bring in?
Yeah, I think the two key guys on offense that you're going to be really looking at is Scott Trey Humphrey. running back out of Montana State. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was a 1,000-yard rusher for a Montana State team that went to the FCS national title game. He actually played in the season opener last year at UNM, put up 140 yards, scored the game-winning touchdown. The go-ahead touchdown with, 4 seconds left or whatever. He's just a really good back. I mean, he's lived up to, kind of his billing during spring ball and all that. You know, he was the guy in the spring game. He got, 4 or 5 carries. And one of those carries, his last one, he scored, a 66-yard touchdown. And the offensive coordinator, Luke Schleissner, told me after, he's like, yeah, we don't need him in there anymore. Like, we've seen this enough. We don't need to leave him out there. And then the other guy is Keegan Johnson, who was a receiver at Kansas State the past 2 years. And then he was at Iowa, did some good things his freshman year there, too. Just a really good play speed. It brings a kind of element at wide receiver that UNM just hasn't quite had in a bit. Not a really big guy. I think he's about 6 foot, 185, or that's what he's listed at right now. But he is just tremendously fast, really sure hands. Just to reiterate, I think he gives them something a little bit different at wide receiver that UNM hasn't had.
They lost a hell of a quarterback in Devin Dampier, and obviously a big compliment when he gets to go to what you would consider the top of the Big 12 in terms of programs in Utah.
Yeah, in terms of what Devin did last year, just kind of a ridiculous season in terms of wasn't perfect all the time, but with the with some of the turnovers and all that too, but his production was just gobsmacking. I think I saw some people on Twitter today kind of talking about him, we only had 12 passing TDs and 12 interceptions. Well, the threat he gave them, both passing and running, defenses didn't know how to handle it. So definitely a compliment, but kind of a bittersweet one for UNM fans.
Let's talk brass tacks, and I'm not expecting you to give me an exact number, but maybe a ballpark figure. We were talking to the Boise folks last week about their program and this new era with the NIL, and no one at this level is going to have a budget of $20.5 million for all sports, but football does have to be competitive, and the Lobos have lost a lot in NIL over the year, in the transfer portal, because of NIL over the years. Basketball has a lot of money because they're at the top of the heap. They have been. I don't know if Olin's going to get that money, but they were at the top of the heap. $1.5 or $2 million, I'm guessing, for NIL. Is there headway on getting football in New Mexico some money?
Yeah, there's definitely been some headway, and that's, I've been on the beat 2.5 years, and that's kind of been the case since I've been on the beat, frankly. 2023, there's a bit more traction and all that, and then last year I know there was plenty of traction as well. I know to actually keep some of the guys that they left, there were going to be some pretty solid offers, but offers that they couldn't quite match, from Power 4 schools and all that, which, it's kind of the way it goes at a lot of G5 places for sure. But it's also, you have the element too where tomorrow things kind of change completely, right, with the rev share and all that as well. So I know that there's been some good efforts, but I think the model's going to change a good deal. So I don't know if I could answer that question, perfectly, but definitely in the time I've been here, there has been a bit more success getting guys paid.
Once again, speaking with Sean Reeder from the Albuquerque Journal, talking all things New Mexico, but getting back to football, you had mentioned sort of the contrasting styles between Bronco Mendenhall and Jason Eck, and now rebuilding. It sounds like a culture change was needed. Somebody who used that word a lot, culture change, was Tony Sanchez, former Gorman coach and UNLV coach. He's now at New Mexico State. Who's got the edge in the Rio Grande rivalry?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It was something I was thinking about a lot the other day, honestly, because I was pouring over NMSU's roster. I would give, just because of the fact that, it's a good question, right? And I'm due for a visit down to Cruz to talk to some guys down there because, they got Logan Fife in the building, and Logan Fife's a guy that, he's done some good work playing quarterback over the last couple of years, Montana and all that. So, I don't know. I would probably lean, and maybe it's just because I've spent more time with them over the past couple of months. I'd probably lean UNM at the moment. But at the same time, they're pretty, if they're not in the exact same spot, they're pretty darn close, frankly, given who, some of the pieces NMSU brought in this summer.
Sean, good spot, man. We appreciate it. And we'll catch up with you. I'm sure you're going to be at Mountain West Conference Football Media Day. So we'll see you then.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Appreciate you.
There is Sean Reeder, Albuquerque Journal. New Mexico out of the gates, kind of tough. At Michigan, they also play at UCLA. Those are two of the first four games. Then they go back-to-back weeks at San Jose, at Boise State, who some people think are the two best teams in the Mountain West Conference if UNLV is not in the top two.
They'll be battle-tested.
Hello. Hello. And back on the schedule this time around, Well, it's going to be a regular deal now because New Mexico and UNLV, are some of the schools that are staying around for the Mountain West Conference. But back on the schedule on November 1st, New Mexico will be in town to take on Dan Mullen's Rebels.